Welcome to the Ayahuasca Parents Podcast.
Good morning.
Hi. Good morning.
How was your morning?
It's good. It's a good morning. Really loving the French press coffee. Yeah. Where have you been all my life?
So we've always had a percolator. Yeah.
Yeah. Who invented that?
I don't know.
It wasn't the French.
Yeah.
Because they got it right.
Yeah. So
I've been giving the French a lot of props the last couple of weeks.
Which is funny because we had a friend that was from Europe come visit. And I made him coffee and he's like, I don't use a percolator because I use a French press, you know, and I gave him shit. I'm like, oh, snobby, you know?
Yeah.
Now I'm like, why have we ever had a percolator and it tastes different?
I'm not a scientist. I don't really understand why a percolator and a French press give you different tastes.
Well, except for we were talking about it, maybe the mold buildup, you know, in the lines of a percolator.
It could be similar like a Keurig or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Gross. When you really think about it, it's like, oh yeah, of course that would happen. Unless you're one of these diligent people that clean out your percolator lines, which who does that?
Nobody. And so, and the percolator has, it's a little more acidic, right? It's just got more of an acidy taste.
I've always had to cut it with baking soda. Yeah.
Yeah. And so would some sort of mold or bacteria build up? I mean, is that acidic?
Yeah, I'm sure it would affect the taste for sure. I can't wait to try it officially when I'm back from ayahuasca. Because right now I'm not doing the coffee thing.
Well, for me, you know, I've been hit and miss coffee, right? It's like, yeah, you know, whatever.
You've always been good like that.
Yeah. Tell the French press.
Joel's like, I'm not going to miss a damn day.
It's good. It's literally renewed my love for coffee.
Yeah.
Well, so anyway, this is not a podcast about coffee, but sometimes we like to talk about random shit. Yep. If you really love coffee.
French press.
Yeah. Go get one now.
Yeah.
And they're like, I don't know. Yep. Anyway.
So today we are basically going to be talking about preparation for ayahuasca. So yeah. I leave for ayahuasca in 9 days. Still boggles my mind. I'm about to go back to Peru and work with the plant.
And this is how many times?
This will be my fourth time in Peru.
And this is a new place for you.
A new sanctuary. It's called the Temple of the Way of Light. There's really like three sanctuaries that have really captivated my attention.
Mm-hmm.
And so when our daughter, who's 19, came to us, and said, hey, you know, basically I'm being called to ayahuasca and this, you know, I want to go.
Yeah.
And she said, where should we go? So I sent her all three places and I just kind of left it up to her. And she came back and what resonated the best with her was the Temple of the Way of Light. Mm. One, because it was a all women's retreat. It's a 9-day all women's retreat with even women facilitators and also women shaman from the Shipibo tribe.
Yeah.
And I think, oh, and the integration piece. So because she's 19, I feel like that was really smart actually on her part, that she saw that she would need somebody to talk to after every single ceremony and bounce things off of and kind of help guide her.
I'm really curious to see how that works, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I loved going to Spirit Quest and that's like my place. Mm-hmm. But you know, I think the integration part, it was kind of like, I mean, again, it was kind of like, you know, just being let loose into the, I don't know, what am I trying to say?
Well, we were kind of pushed out into the deep end.
Yeah. And I didn't,
which is a very indigenous format, but keep in mind also that indigenous people that take ayahuasca, they have generations and generations of individuals that have also done that. And so they almost have integration masters right inside of their home because mom and dad or grandma or grandpa, aunts and uncles have already done the medicines.
Yeah, it's a whole tribe that they have.
That was not our experience.
No, I didn't. You know, every time I researched something prior to going to, you know, Peru the first time, it never came up for me.
Well, even our shaman, the first time we went, never even talked about integration.
Yeah.
That was something that I actually found myself.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, Joel, we're integrating. Like, this is like, what, it was like, what does that mean? And then it was
explain
like,
explain this to me.
There was a lot of having to trust myself. There was a lot of like, you know, hoping that I was on the right track and doing it right. And there was a lot of insecurity. It was really difficult. The first, it was really difficult, but really cool, I guess, that first year. And I'm happy that I had that experience. But I could see how that would be very traumatic. In fact, I've heard more people say over and over and over again that they went on an ayahuasca experience and they were having all these visions or things happening, and there's no context for it because that's not the world that we live in. And they were almost in a psychosis because they weren't understanding what was going on, and they didn't have the connection to self.
I kind of feel like I can fall into that category because when we came home, life was a little weird for me.
Yeah. And I think it's just the way my brain operates.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this ability to take fractal pieces of information and make sense out of them, like bring them together and see how it all fits and works. You know, I understand I'm strange like that. Like, I know that not everybody's brains operate like, you know, how mine does.
I really appreciate your brain working that way. To be honest, I do.
But I just knew somehow early on, I knew that everything was like a breadcrumb trail.
Yeah.
Like it was like an adventure. And I love adventures and puzzles and mind games and brain games and things like that.
Yeah.
So for me, it was like, let's figure out the mystery.
So, well, what else do you like about Temple the Way of Light? Because you've never been there. So what is making you the most, what's making you excited and nervous? And
well, so I mean, I think it's great. I'm a loner. I come across as an extrovert, but you know this about me. I really like to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird, I'm very strange like that.
Yeah.
I like sitting in my own energy. You know, I love just kind of being within my own imagination, you know? And because of that, sometimes I isolate myself specifically from the community of women. It actually terrifies me. And I thought about this, you know, once Kylie said, I want to go to the Temple of the Way of Light. And I'm like, wow, okay, well, I'm going to have to be in a big group of women. That usually doesn't go very well for me. And then I started realizing, like, where's my resistance to this? Why don't I want to do this? Like, why am I afraid of this? And I mean, let's be honest, it has most likely a lot to do with the fact that I was beaten by a woman and abused by a woman.
Mm, yeah.
And so I inherently just don't trust women. And I've had so many negative experiences, you know, even the last like 6 years with older women.
Yeah.
You know, where, you know, for whatever reason, they're either, you know, threatened or intimidated or whatnot. And, you know, and I don't know, maybe it's a little bit my profession too. You know, the women in my profession just seem to be much more difficult to work with than the men.
Mm.
And so I think my resistance or my nervousness has come from this idea that I could bond with other women. It's sad, but it's the truth.
Well,
so I want to experience it. I'm going to be open, and I'm going to do my best to, you know, open my heart and let that community, you know, love me. I mean, honestly, like when I really think about it, I'm trying not to be emotional, but I'm really connected to my emotions lately.
Yeah.
I'm not really necessarily certain I've ever allowed another woman to love me. It's sad. So sad.
Well, then there's a lot to be gained from this.
Yeah.
This trip. So.
But full disclosure, I'm terrified.
Yeah, don't be.
I mean, like, some people are terrified of snakes. I guess I'm terrified of other women's love.
Well, you know, like Wim Hof says.
Yeah.
Go towards what you're most terrified, you know, which, you know, he's the cold. But,
yeah,
you know, I think if you're having these types of feelings right off the bat, it's you're getting a glimpse of some of the things you're going to accomplish.
Yeah. And the thing is that I think what I realized just like the last, you know, maybe week,
mm-hmm.
Is that like, this is keeping me this resistance or this, you know, brick wall that I've built around myself when it comes to other women is keeping me from really connecting to my daughters. in a way that I really want to connect to my daughters. And it's always been easier for me to connect to men. It's always been easier for me to connect to my boys, you know, but when it comes to my daughters, like they get to a certain age and I start to build this resistance and I recognize that this is a patterned behavior. I'm just so grateful to see it within myself. Like, yeah. How beautiful is it that, you know, that we get to work with plant medicines that give us such insights about what's happening within ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've just had a ridiculous amount of gratitude.
I'm like, you sound very grateful this morning.
I'm very grateful this morning. let's see what else I liked. I think I mentioned this yesterday, but the minute that I saw the Shipibo shaman, and then there's some YouTube videos and I listened to her sing an Ikaro.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm like, I have to look at her in her face.
Yeah.
I have to grab those cheeks. I have to give her kisses. Like there was some soul heart recognition.
How many women are singing the Ikaros? Do you know?
I think it's two women. And then we have like two women facilitators. I don't know how this works. Like, I don't know if the facilitators, you know, walk around and touch you, you know, we and comfort you, that type of thing. The other one is more compassion care. It sounds like there's going to be someone stationed by the door to help guide you to the restroom if you need to.
Yeah.
But in my previous plant medicine experiences, there was a don't touch, nobody touch, you know, nobody basically interrupt anybody else. It was like, everybody's in their own bubble. Let everybody stay in their own bubble.
Yeah.
Right. We don't touch people. We don't talk to people during ceremony. You know, the only thing that you heard during ceremony was the Ikaros and this, you know, this crazy sound of people throwing up and purging.
I mean, just, you know, so for people that don't know, the Ikaros are these songs that most of these shamans say the plants taught them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that reminds me too. The other reason why I really, really liked this place is there's no denominational influence.
Oh, yeah.
Because
weird. That was the weirdest part.
Because when the Spaniards attempted to, you know,
colonize everybody, South America,
yeah, they infused it with Christianity. And so a lot of the Ikaros have some Christian influence to it. The other thing that I really, really like about the Temple of the Way of Light is that they keep their brew very indigenous. So it's just ayahuasca and chacruna. So there's no other plants. So the other sanctuary that we went to, they would put in what they call the teacher plant or bobinsana. I've heard that some shamans' brews have up to 12 other plants or 12 plants total.
Really?
Yeah. And so this is very, I would consider it pure clean. It's literally just
kind of stripped down and kind of, and you say that's the way that it's that's the indigenous, like going deep, going back.
Yeah. And so I think that was the other thing that was really attractive to me. Sorry for the squeaky sound noises. That would be our doggo.
Just trying to keep him occupied instead of chewing through power cords that he did previously.
Yeah.
So just with you know, we've mentioned Ikaros a couple times and, you know, that's basically, you know, those, these songs that they sing while you're under the medicine, for me, help create the experience.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that you say that didn't really do, they don't really do much for you.
I don't know. My experiences were just so much different. It was, you know, but I've heard that, like, you heard the Ikaros sometimes going like sideways. You felt like they were going sideways, or, you know, a lot of people felt that the medicine was very amplified, or they'd go into their trance states with the Ikaros.
Yeah.
You know, it's just,
you should have seen the look on Don Howard's face when I was like, how did they sing that sideways? He's looking at me like, oh, dude, you and your stupid questions.
No.
And I'm like, was I the only one? He goes, well, do you remember what was going on? And I said, yeah, I was like in some sort of kind of underworld. And he was like, yeah, that makes sense. I'm like, does it? Because again, everything was sideways and backwards and offbeat and off count. And I was like, this is really crazy. I was thinking while I was having this weird moment vision, I was thinking, how are they doing that?
The Ikaros for me are very physical. And just, I was in a lot of discomfort. Yeah.
But I mean, really, the Ikaro doesn't... I'm happy that this place doesn't put all that Christian Catholic Catholicism in there. But, you know, for the most part, it's really just the sound.
Right.
It's the sound. It's, a frequency. And for me, it very much shows me, directs kind of my experience. And then when they take a break, because, you know, they take a break every song, mm-hmm. Then I have rest.
Right.
You know?
Right. So one of the things that I just wanted to talk about a little bit was preparation for ayahuasca.
Yeah.
Because I think that's something that everybody's really curious about. And so what I did is I pulled up the preparation manuals that the Temple of the Way of Light sent me. And then also just the preparation manual from Spirit Quest. Tons of similarities. I'm not going to quote anything from these manuals because... you know, it's something that is unique to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I can say that, for instance, restrictions before and during your retreat. So I'm sure most people know by now that to actually work with ayahuasca, there are certain things you can or cannot eat or do, can or cannot take as far as pharmaceuticals or recreational drugs, 2 weeks to 4 weeks before.
Dog is literally fucking attacking me. We're talking like, what the hell, dude?
He's always in the room with us.
I think he needs to go outside for a minute. To be honest with you, okay. He's got a lot of energy.
Yeah, maybe that's. I'm gonna hit
pause real quick, okay. And we'll be back. Okay, we're back. Sorry about that.
Doggos.
The dog just chewed through a power cord. He's a puppy. He's 5 months old. And then I have a guitar behind my desk. Sometimes I dig around a guitar and. I was worried that he was going to like try to eat the guitar next. So I kept trying to shoo him over to this blanket where his doggy bone is so he could chill. And he thought, oh, it's go time. And so we're trying to have a conversation and he's just biting me and attacking me in his cute, playful puppy way. So anyways, he's on a timeout.
Yeah. And if you didn't know it before, we're just two regular people having a conversation.
Yeah. We're just trying to pass on some ayahuasca wisdom.
Yeah.
Anyway. Anyways, that was fun.
He's cute.
What?
Okay, we were talking about restrictions before or during your retreat.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, you were talking.
Yeah.
I was listening.
Yeah, shocker.
Continue.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's things that you cannot eat, basically, and or, you know, do. Like there's some, I think I said this, pharmaceutical or recreational drugs.
Got to get off pharmaceuticals for real. And just, you know, anytime... we mentioned that. I'm going to mention just quickly, it's a bitch.
The SSRIs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
antidepressants.
You can email me if you want more, if you have more questions, I'd be happy to answer them because it was really difficult for me to get off them. But I'll just say real quickly so you can continue. 2000 milligrams of fish oil. When you start getting off of those, you'll thank me later.
Yeah. It was a saving grace.
Brain shocks. You get brain shocks.
Yeah, we talked about that actually in another previous one.
Cool.
Podcast, but yeah, email Joel because he had, what were you on, 40 milligrams?
Started at 40 of Lexapro.
Yeah.
Which is just a...
that's a lot.
Derivative of what? What was it? Or not derivative.
A generic brand of something else?
Well, just they you know how they just keep tweaking them and then coming, you know, trying to...
yeah, I don't remember. I'm not hip to the SSRIs anymore. I was on 10 milligrams of Cilapram.
It's an offshoot of one of the main ones. Mm-hmm. I just can't remember what it was. But yeah, I went from, and the idea was go to 40, to 20, to 10, to 5, to 2.5, to done.
Yeah.
You know, because I was getting them in, I think I was getting them in 10 milligram pills. And so I was basically taking a quarter. And then after I got down to a quarter, then it was like every 2 days, then to every other day.
Yeah.
Or every other day to every 2 days.
Well,
to...
and you did it in a very small amount of time, really.
Yeah, how long did it take? I don't even remember.
You had to be off them officially 6 weeks before you took ayahuasca. Mm. I believe it was 6 weeks. And don't anybody quote me on that. Like if you're on an antidepressant and you're thinking about doing ayahuasca, you should reach out to the facility and ask them.
Yeah.
Because I'm not 100% certain it was 6 weeks, but I knew that it was quite a bit of time before you took ayahuasca that you had to be off of them.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And so you figured out a schedule based on that.
Yeah.
And hit your mark. But once you were off of them, it was brutal. Brutal.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, but yeah, it was the fish oil, and you took as much fish oil as you could, if I remember right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's the argument how much body, how much of the fish oil can your body absorb or use?
Right.
I didn't care.
Yeah.
The way I looked at it was
having a bottle a day.
I'm just going to overdo it. Well, I mean, the thing was, is I was so desperate. I Googled and Googled and Googled and Googled and found some obscure chat board. We don't even have those anymore. Where some guy was like, well, this is what I found. It worked for me. And I was like, I'll fucking try it.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah.
And then we'd email, just so you know, then we'd email our shaman and say, can we take this?
Mm-hmm.
So you get to a certain point where I call in the pocket for ayahuasca, where you don't put anything in your body without asking, like not even herbs. Like there's a bunch of herbs that can, that can also contradict with ayahuasca. And the way I really see it is that, you know, like botanicals, like I work with a lot of botanical medicines.
Yeah.
But the botanicals, in my perspective, all have a consciousness as well. And so, you know, decreasing the amount of consciousnesses that you're working with leading up to ayahuasca kind of makes it possible for you to kind of discern, you know, the consciousness of ayahuasca, if that makes sense. That's my two cents.
Well, and I think it's important to note, and I think we saw this with ourselves and then other people that came, that the more you put into it, the more you're going to get out of it.
Yeah.
So the more the serious, you know, take the dieta seriously.
Yeah. So
it's prep.
I'm just a serious person in general. And, you know, a plus student in school. So
no, that's why you're perfect for me. Cause like if I was married to another me, we would have been blurring some lines.
I like to be prepared and on time. I'm one of those people. Yeah. You know, I can also be spontaneous and fun, but yeah. I really like to be prepared and on time. And
yeah.
And these really and truly, these plants have given me so much. I feel like it's the least that I can do.
It's respect.
Right. And so I've really been in preparation for a month now, even though technically speaking, some of the things you have to abstain from 4 weeks, most of the diet prep is 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And so now I'm within that 2 week pocket.
So what does that diet look like?
Okay. So, 2 week prior, to ayahuasca, you cannot eat pork. No sexual activities of any kind, including masturbation, no alcohol, cannabis, all street drugs. So cocaine, MDMA, amphetamines, et cetera. Let's see, spicy foods, ice cream or ice cold drinks. Now that's different, from our previous experience. They never mentioned ice cream or ice cold drinks, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
1 week prior to an ayahuasca experience, you must abstain from refined sugars, red meat, junk foods, salt or pepper, sweets or chocolate, oils, animal fats, lard, butter, carbonated drinks, including diet sodas, energy drinks, non-alcoholic beer, no dairy products, no fermented foods, no caffeine and other stimulants. And then, you know, it just talks about restrictions. Ayahuasca is not compatible with pregnancy. And then it also has, this is interesting, and I forgot about this too. It has a little disclaimer that says, if you will be menstruating during the retreat, please inform your facilitator when you arrive. And we've had somebody, the first time we went, we had somebody start her period when she was at the retreat. And the reason being is that they do a special ceremony to seal you because I really don't know all the necessary reasonings for it, other than it makes you susceptible when you're on your period. And so they do a special ceremony for you. And then the last thing is they want you to avoid any synthetic soaps, perfumes, toiletries, etc. And I already do that. Like I don't work with any chemicals at all. No cleaning chemicals. Like my whole house is chemical free. Yeah.
These podcasts will be coming up.
Yeah.
I really think you need to share all that stuff. But anyway.
Yeah.
So you being the A+ student, you've started this. You basically wanted to do a holiday detox.
Yeah. I wanted to do a bowel detox. And so I'm making the diet productive.
Hmm.
Meaning that I chose to also coincide it with a detox. So I did a bowel detox, which was at that time I was working with a bunch of botanicals because I wasn't in the pocket yet. So I could still work with the botanicals, healing teas, to help, heal the bowel. Basically I went on a food vacation. So I just drank some juices a couple times a day and then pots of these botanical teas. And then, you know, I had like lemon and aloe ginger drinks, mm-hmm. some hibiscus tea. And I did that for 2 weeks. And then the third week was basically...
Did it work?
Oh, yeah. I got exactly the results. It was funny, too, because I wanted to go 3 weeks. But at the end of the 2 weeks, and I really wasn't suffering too much from hunger or... Like, I knew it was working. Like, my body was talking to me. It just... I was very much connected to my body and learning things about, you know, my intestinal villi and microvilli, things that I had been aware of, but I really hadn't gotten into, mm-hmm. you know, the physiology or like really the biochemistry of what those, you know, what those things do. And anyway, so I was doing a lot of research, but I had every intention of going 3 weeks. And then it was almost like my body was like, nope, we're done. 2 weeks was good enough. And so I started to eat again. So I've been eating, you know, grapefruit. In the morning, I love oatmeal. Mm-hmm. And so I take oatmeal, no salt. So just plain oats. And then, you know, I make the oatmeal. And then I cut up a half of an apple. And then I cut up like 10 grapes.
Yeah.
And then I add no salt peanut butter on the top of that. And that's what I eat for breakfast.
Yeah. Which.
Yeah. It's really great.
My mom would have showed me peanut butter and oatmeal back in the day, mixing some apples. I'd eat an oatmeal every friggin' day.
I know. And so that really satiates me until about 1:30, 2 o'clock. And then I think I mentioned this yesterday. I've been reading a lot about eating per your circadian rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just blown my mind because the way I've always eaten is, you know, sometimes breakfast, let's be honest, like coffee was usually breakfast. And then I'd eat, you know, lunch later on in the afternoon. And then by 3, 4, I have the crazy munchies. And then I want to eat, you know, at dinner time.
So you're snacking while you're making dinner.
Yeah. But I've been really paying attention. Like I realized that I really needed to pay attention to my body. And, you know, thankfully, I've noticed some things like I'm not usually really hungry at nighttime. Hmm. Like I eat because it's dinner time and because we eat dinner as a family.
Yeah.
So it's a time to spend time with the kids and no technology and we kind of shoot the shit and laugh and things like that. That's what we do as a family.
Yeah.
And, but what I'm realizing is that, I started to switch things up since I haven't had to make dinner cause you've been so kind to do that. So I could do these, you know, detoxes and then prep for ayahuasca.
Yeah.
I've been able to kind of play around.
It's been fun. So
I've been able to play around with my circadian rhythm a little bit. And what I've realized is that eating breakfast in the morning about 9:30 satiates me till about 1:30. Then if I eat my biggest meal of the day, then I'm not even thinking about food. Like I cruise right past that 3, 4 o'clock munchie hour, which is amazing for me. And then I'll have, 5:36, probably more like 6:00. I'll eat a big bowl of watermelon and then have a grapefruit, you know, and if I want to a banana.
Yeah.
You know, but I think once I'm done with ayahuasca, I'm going to explore some things that way. We've been talking to the kids about that, like switching dinner from, between 6 and 7 and eating dinner right after school about 3:30.
Yeah. Yeah. It was funny. You know, you fed Lexi, 4?
I think it was more like, you mean her snack yesterday?
I thought you made her dinner.
No, that was yesterday. That was 2 days ago.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah, I did. I made her dinner 2 days ago. And then she just had a snack. But you guys were eating dinner at the regular time. So I think she was like, well, wait, should I be? So we'll just have to all get on the same page.
Yeah.
That was, probably TMI, but there you go. And then they have restrictions after you get back from ayahuasca. And so basically it's the same thing. Like 2 weeks after you get back. From ayahuasca, you're going to, here's what the Temple of the Way of Light says. Restrictions following your retreat. For 3 days after, protect the crown, your head, from sunlight and rain. That was new to me as well.
Okay.
So I thought that was interesting. For 2 weeks after, abstain from spicy foods, alcohol, sexual activities of any kind, including masturbation, ice cream, and ice cold drinks. And then 2 to 4 weeks after, you want to abstain from pork, cannabis, massage, and energy work, all street drugs, you know, cocaine, MDMA, amphetamines.
Yeah.
And then they
real quickly, I've met a couple people
mm-hmm.
that thought the whole pork thing was just kind of whatever. Mm-hmm. They got violently sick. These are meat eaters. These aren't vegetarians or vegans.
Yeah.
These are people that were like, I just want to get back to my pork ribs, you know? And
yeah,
Parker was one of them. Got crazy sick. So, you know.
Yeah, I think a lot of people follow these rules, think that these are suggestions.
No, it's your operation manual. You should, if you want the most, you should follow it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's the ego that likes to tell us that we don't need to adhere to these types of things.
Yeah.
That we know better. If you think you know better than these plant medicines, that says a lot right there. So I don't know what to say about that. If you think you're smarter, like, you might want to think about that for a minute. Yeah. Because it's so not true. It's not even kind of close.
First time we went and we followed it to a T.
Oh, yeah. I was on it like Blue Bonnet, man. I was like, I really, really, really needed it to work for me because I really, really didn't want to suffer the rest of my life.
Well, we're on that third plane where you go from Lima to Iquitos.
Right.
And everyone on that plane is basically going to a retreat. Everyone. Right. And we're sitting next to a bunch of people and we're trading stories. Oh, you're going to the same place we are, blah, 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 blah. And there's a handful of people that are eating the airplane food and just going to town on salted nuts. Almonds. I was like... They're like, well, I just think that was a suggestion. No, no.
Well, and some people launched into that. Well, ayahuasca is jealous. And I'm like, you haven't taken ayahuasca. How do you know? But that seemed to be like a mantra I heard from a lot of people. Well, ayahuasca is a jealous plant. I'm like, I don't know who started that, but that's
was coincidental, but the majority of people I saw that were not taking the diet seriously had a hard time connecting with the plant. At first. So just leave it at that. Again, I think you get what you put into it. And it's not like you're going to go to Peru every day or every year. So you might as well take it 100% seriously and do the preparation because.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, because it's also a respect thing too. And I think, you know, I don't think anybody understands what ayahuasca is their first time as they're going to a third world country to take a plant in the middle of a jungle.
Right.
Like, you don't know what it is.
Yeah.
You know, there's a consciousness there for sure. And that means that there's an intelligent essence on the other side that's going to communicate with you and, you know, be respectful.
Yeah. That actually, once it connects, knows more about you actually before it even connects, because Kylie and I both, Kylie's never taken ayahuasca and she is having, incredible healing right now.
Yeah.
You know, This plant has this ability to understand you more so than you understand yourself. It understands more about you than you'll ever understand about yourself your whole life.
Yeah.
And in a way, that's comforting.
Yeah.
For me, it's comforting.
Well, so this being your fourth time, it seems like this has been a comfortable dieta for you.
Right? Well... Full disclosure, I think leading up to ayahuasca, the last three times I've always been terrified. You know, fear has been a big part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so like there's been a lot of having to go through layers of my fear programming. And every time I think that I've conquered something, I have, but there's always something else, you know, to see.
Yeah.
So what's interesting about this time is I think a lot of it had to do with the last... time that I worked with ayahuasca, and she said, you know, she showed me that I mentioned this yesterday in the podcast, but I'm just going to say it again, just in case some people aren't watching them, numerically, like I spaced on the word. What is that word?
Yeah.
That, you know, the last time it was actually my last time. So the third ceremony, we had four ceremonies, but the fourth ceremony, nothing happened. Like I literally threw up ayahuasca, went back to my room, turned on my light. Like that never happened before with me. Mm-hmm. So really my last time really connecting ayahuasca was that third ceremony. And she showed me this full length mirror. She was standing right next to it. And she was just showing me how she's a reflection of what's going on within me. And that's what she does. That's how she works. You know, that she just loves us. And she loves us so much that she's able to let us each project onto her and judge her when in reality, all she's doing is being this incredible, like reflective consciousness for us.
Yeah.
You know, coincidentally about that too, after that ceremony, I was at breakfast. So the next morning I was at, at breakfast. Mm-hmm. And there was this dude that came up to me and he was like telling all these people how he became the medicine and, you know, and he had messages for everybody.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, ayahuasca had a message for you too. And I said, oh, really? And he's like, do you want to know what it was? And I'm thinking, well, yeah. And, you know, I've just listened to you say all these wonderful things to all these other people. And he launches into how I have an ego and how I don't like it when people tell me things that are contrary to what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now he's literally projecting onto me.
Yeah, I know who this right? person is.
And, yeah.
yeah. For sure, and he's projecting on you.
And I literally, I was so offended. Like I was on like this plant high.
Yeah.
And then he said that and I just thought it was so rude and so mean, you know?
Yeah.
And I would go back to my room like, what am I supposed to see? Because that's what I always do. I'm like, what am I supposed to see within this? Like, why is this happening? And then, you know, it was like so plain as day. Ayahuasca was like, you know, showed me basically her power, which is, this is what everybody does to me 24/7 when they work with me, is they project onto me and judge me, when in reality, I'm just reflecting back at them. And I was like, well, I don't even kind of have the equanimity or the emotional mastery to even let that happen with, you know, some dude that doesn't even know me, you know, start, you know. But anyways, it was such an interesting experience that I had. And it really just gave me, like, I really just felt really connected to her, that she would allow me to see kind of a peek behind the scenes that way. And then she kept on just saying, remember, Cam, you have a relationship with these plants. You have a relationship with these plants. You know, remember, it's about you and the plants.
Yeah.
And that kind of revealed itself during my plant dieta a couple weeks later, what exactly that meant. And I'm not going to go into that, but maybe another time.
Yeah. So you're doing the dieta and you're preparing.
Yeah. And so I'm doing the diet and I am preparing and I feel really at peace.
Yeah.
I really feel like that maybe although the other 12 cups of ayahuasca were to help to prepare me for this experience I'm about to have, you know, I don't have the nerves like I usually do, you know,
is this place on the edge of the Amazon River?
Yeah. It's about a mile in. So
you're not going to have water. You don't see water.
I don't think so. I'm not. They have like an inlet lake. So from what I can see, there's like a swimming pond.
Huh.
But no, I don't think it's right. Because we get off on our boat and then they say that it's going to that we hike a mile into the jungle, which I think is remarkable.
Oh, yeah.
So we're not going to have, because the other place is right on a tributary of the Amazon River. And you can see and hear all the boats, which sound like lawnmowers.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't think we're even going to have that kind of noise, background noise. So that should be interesting.
And what do, you know, so the first place we went to, we all had these like little shacks or rooms, you know, what do you know?
Yeah. So they're calling these tambos.
Are they individual or are they connected like the other place?
I'm not certain because when I look at the gallery, it's not like they're really giving you great, you know, like aerial perspective.
Do you know what the bathrooms are like?
I have no idea. I just know.
No, I'm just curious because, you know, you and I haven't had this conversation.
Yeah, I believe. Yes, I know they have showers. I just okay. And I don't know if we're going to have a bathroom that's connected to our tambo, if there's a community bathroom, if there are community showers.
Does your room have power in it?
Have no idea about that. I just know that I won't have any outlets to charge anything. They made that pretty clear.
Yeah.
And we're checking, I'm going to just check my phone. They give you the option of honor system or just checking your phone. I'm just going to give them my phone.
Yeah.
So that's 9 days of no technology.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, I'm excited about that, but I've never gone 9 days without talking to you and the kids.
Yeah.
So I'm a little bit concerned about that, but.
Well, while you're gone, we're going to make a crystal grid and we're going to ohm and we're going to try to connect you guys.
Sure you are. But I'll have Kylie, which is helpful. Yeah. I suffer from homesickness crazy bad.
Yeah, I know. That's why you're never going to leave us.
No matter how many times I pack up the car.
Screw those guys. It's like 2 days later. I miss my family.
It's so true.
We miss you too.
When I was doing that plant dieta. Mm-hmm. Where you sit in silence for nearly a week.
Yeah, that was fucking brutal for us too, by the way. How's mom doing? I don't know. She's not allowed to talk to us.
I had this moment where, I mean, I would have done anything. Like, I felt like such a spoiled little brat after about 34 hours of sitting in my own silence. Oh my gosh. I was like, I would have done anything to come home and have a crazy fight with you. I just felt so, you know, like so ungrateful. I had no idea. I saw a side of my ego that I really just, I really had never seen before. I don't know if I've ever really talked about the plant dieta before, but if you haven't, I mean, if you have an opportunity to spend a week, nearly a week in silence, man, it is so powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you don't need to diet. Like I was dieting on a specific plant called Bobinsana, which is a flower.
Yeah.
But you don't have to. I mean, it's wonderful. So it definitely made me feel very motivated and appreciative.
Yeah, you know, I thought the idea was absolutely batshit crazy, terrible.
I know, you think a lot of my ideas are crazy.
But, you know, the I've thought about it a lot in the last couple of days, actually. Yeah. Especially when we were, you know, when I was hearing about how Aubrey Marcus did his week in the dark.
Right.
Which, was it in silence too or just in the dark?
No, just in the dark.
Yeah, and I was thinking, I mean, that might be good for some sort of visuals, but I was thinking, man, like silence where like no one's talking to you. You're not talking. And literally like, where does your mind go?
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, it goes everywhere where it goes. Yeah. And it's trying to make it all better. Like your ego's like, it's fine. It's fine that you're not talking and that you're in your own silence and you're by yourself. It's fine
that every second is actually 4,000 seconds and you're actually, you know, time has stopped for you.
Well, and this was after I had done a week of ayahuasca, a week of Wachuma. So I've already been away from home for like 15 days. And then I did the plant dieta. It was really the hardest thing I've ever done.
My favorite part of the story is you're like, and it was this many steps from this place to this place. I was like, holy shit, you're counting steps?
Oh, yeah. I was like, you go kind of cuckoo.
Yeah. Just for not talking.
Yeah.
Because you're walking around the sanctuary, which is a big place.
Yeah, well,
nobody's there with
you. I mean, I sort of was quarantined to one little area because there was a whole bunch of workers. So,
yeah.
I mean, they call it at least for me, it wasn't silent. There was tons of noise and workers and tons of people all around doing stuff. I just wasn't allowed to talk to anybody except for I could say, you know, buenas, you know, noches to my compassion care guy. And then every other day we did a ceremony with Bobinsana and then the indigenous shamans came and got me. We were in the Maloka. They sang Icaros. They blessed me with the Mapacho. I got to, you know, use a chacapa and sing along at one point with them. And that was really nice. So, and then partake of the Bobinsana tincture. But
I'm interested.
Yeah, it was very interesting. And, you know, the trees have a way of, you know, inducing thoughts and thought patterns. And, you know, my imagination was almost lit on fire. And then I was able to address some things that I had really never even thought about, you know, in all my plant medicine journeys, my dad had never even come up. And so I ended up writing a letter to my dad.
Yeah.
And, that was very healing, you know, like there were some things that just, it pulls out of you all these different experiences, which is why I like doing these types of things, pulls out of you something different, you know, fresh, new perspectives. And I'm all about those shifts in perspective.
Yeah.
It's just, it really, well, you know, gets me excited when I get a download and I'm like, oh yes, like that was a cool perspective. And then it's trying to integrate that into my life.
Well, I think it's going to be an awesome experience, especially since you get to go with Kylie.
Yeah. Well, and so that just talks about the diet part, but there's another type of preparing for a trip like this. And both retreat centers kind of follow the same pattern. They talk about intention. And they ask some really great questions like, why are you seeking this medicine? You know, your intention is your mantra, focus, and thread to the material realm. It can help you keep focus while engaged with this deep work and is the most important first step of integration.
Have you identified your intention yet?
Well, my intentions keep on moving because the intentions, they ask you what your intention is when you fill out the original intake questionnaire. Well, I was in a really bad place, you know, having found out that my stepdad was a pedophile and that one of my children was a victim. Mm-hmm. And that it happened twice, that my mother was aware, she knew, that she's kept the secret for at least a decade, if not more. And so a lot of my intentions were to kind of heal those wounds. And, you know, I'm proud to say those wounds have been healed, you know?
Yeah, it's funny how that works, right? Once you sent the attention, yeah, it just starts happening.
Yeah.
So then you send another one.
Right.
And then it starts, yeah, anyway, go ahead.
You know, I still struggle with, I mean, a little bit of depression. Like, I get pulled into these depressive states sometimes. And
yeah.
So just kind of like, what's going on there? Is that a physical imbalance of, you know, like a chemical thing? Is, you know, do I have another thought paradigm, or, you know, is there more mental illness or brain damage that I haven't, that I'm not aware of? You know, I think my fears are like, well, have I, is there something else that happened to me when I was a child or an infant that I don't remember that is, you know.
Couldn't they just be echoes though?
Could be, that's creating this kind of disease. But these are all the things that were going through my mind, you know. But really and truly, I think, well, I feel that part of my purpose of going this time is to really understand what my calling is. You know, from the first time I took a plant medicine, I knew I was on a mission.
Yeah.
And I know everybody thought I was crazy when I said it too. Even you. I know you thought I was just nuts, bonkers. Like, well, what? I mean, you were like,
part of me was like, okay,
we're on a mission.
And the other part of me was like, are we like superheroes?
But I just knew, I'm like, yeah, I'm on a mission. And, you know, for 6 years I've been seeking. Well, really for 4 years I was seeking. And finally I just surrendered it. But I'm to a point now where it's like, you know, I have some talents, right? Some, yeah, you know, like I'm a really good.
You're good at cooking. You're good at healing people with botanicals. Like, I mean.
But yeah. I love doing that, but I love helping people feel good about themselves, and, yeah, and I love leaving people feeling more than less than. And I love helping to, you know, spark, you know, I don't know, just, I just like to help, yeah, people see inside of themselves what,
yeah,
you know, what they really are versus what they project on themselves to be, probably because that's, you know, I suffered from a lot of that.
There's gotta be some sort of like, you know, when you understand that the body is just the vehicle for the soul, when you can see the difference between the, mm-hmm, two, you know, and then the soul is energy and energy is infinite and cannot be destroyed. We've all heard that, you know, and so I strongly believe that this isn't our first, you know, rodeo down here. We've done this plenty, yeah, of times, right?
Yeah, of course.
Well, of course, there's a mission. There's a point. There's a
purpose,
a
calling, some, whatever.
You know,
I mean, pick
and
a,
to
pick
have,
a term.
And to have, you know, someone like you that, you know, started getting tortured probably in the womb.
Yeah. Okay.
But at least a couple months outside the womb.
All roads lead to that.
Right.
Well, I finally asked a health professional what would give a child a bladder infection in utero, because I was born with a bladder infection.
Yeah.
And I'm like, is that dirty amniotic fluid? Because that's pretty much what my research showed me. And they're like, well, yeah. They're like,
mom's a hooker.
Well, I don't know what she was doing.
Right. But
nobody knows what she was doing.
Yeah.
You know, clearly.
We just know that what she says is not what,
yes,
she was doing.
Probably opposite. Like, we, yeah, should ask her leading questions when she says no. We're like, okay, that's a yes then.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, yeah. And so I think now my intent is to surrender and be completely open. So at first my intention was no intention. Because here's your spiritual ego. Here's my spiritual ego coming out. Like, I'm just going to be open, really open, you know.
I'm just going to say namaste.
And then I'm like, wait a second. Focus is so important. You know, no. There's absolutely some things. And in the Temple of the Way of Lights manual, they ask you some leading questions. And I love it. I grabbed my journal. And I started answering all of them, trying to hone this intent. You know, what's my intent versus my intention? Like, what really do I want to know about me? You know, and I felt, I think, a little guilty and selfish asking questions like that.
Yeah.
But this is my life. I know I'm on a mission. I know there's something specific that I'm set here to do. And I want to know what that is.
Yeah.
Or at least I'd like a little, you know, a clue, like maybe my next clues, you know. And then, I mean,
you get it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for me, the most amazing part of the ayahuasca experiences is always coming home and integrating. Mm-hmm. And integration is equally rough and amazing and beautiful. And I love the downloads. Like, I really do. I love the connection of the connection that I get.
Yeah.
You know? So I think I'm looking for that. You know, I think this last year threw me some interesting questions, like what the fuck was that, you know, with finding out about a pedophile in our midst, like what the fuck was that? And just like, this is a lot of abuse. Wow. Like, I am only one person. How much more abuse and abuse stories can reveal and show themselves to me? But on the flip side, I'm grateful to know.
Yeah, no, same. I'm grateful to know too. The timing, it was like, Jesus Christ, literally, we're going to wait until everything feels awesome.
I know, we were in such a great place.
And then it's just like, boom.
I know.
It didn't
just knock me off my feet, people. It was like, I was freaking face down in 5 feet of mud.
I feel like there was a universal hand involved, you know?
Yeah.
I just go backwards and like, you needed a minute to yourself. You stay at your parents' house. You end up saging their house because it feels funky.
Oh, I know. It's weird.
So you sage the house. And then weeks later, we're all on vacation together. I feel like that because we've seen Sage do some crazy things, right?
Yeah.
It pulls shit out of people. I don't know what it is, but every time it pulls something out. And we got this crazy old man that's just basically like, yeah, I'm going to tell you I'm a pedophile now.
The way it all came out.
How everybody just talked and opened their mouth, and you know they all regretted it after. Like, why did I say that? But sometimes we're not in charge of what comes out of our mouth.
Absolutely. And it happened really when it needed to happen. It happened perfectly.
Perfectly.
And I'm really happy to know. And I don't want any more secrets. So that's my other intention is, are there any other secrets or trauma or things about me or my children or anybody that I love that I need to know of? You know? So I think,
I don't want to find ourselves in a really good place again. And then the rug gets ripped out from under us. I mean, it would be nice if we could get it all out because, you know, with who we are now compared to where we were 6 years ago, when we first started this and what we've learned and what we can do and how we can help people and this and that, it's time to be able to, you know, launch, you know, something that's going to help people. And to do that.
Yeah.
And to focus on it and really put all your focus in it. You got to have all the pain cleared up, you know?
Yeah. Well, and the pain has just been incredible teachers for me, you know, and
but at some point the student becomes the doer, right?
Yeah.
Well, I guess. At some point,
everybody keeps on saying that. Our fascia guy always tells me that. He's like, at some point the student becomes the teacher. I'm like, I'm not interested in being a teacher. I love this idea. I think you got it from...
Kind of depends what you define teacher as, though.
Well, what's his name? Something House.
Lewis House.
Lewis House. And I love, love, love what he says about... Or no, he was talking to someone else, was talking about mentors.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, you always should have a mentor and be a mentor.
He was talking to Bob Proctor.
Yeah. And I love that because this idea of like teachers or gurus... Listen, if you are listening to anybody at this point on YouTube that's coming out and telling you about, now this is what spirituality is, now this is what
it's not a mentor.
Spirit guides, right? This is an egoic spiritual person or a spiritual ego person that is trying to basically do a one size fits all.
Right.
And that drives me nuts.
Mentor is more of somebody that shares their wisdoms and their experiences and you take from it what you want.
Yeah. And there's some reciprocity. Yeah. It's not like I know everything. Come listen to me.
Yeah.
You know, like and subscribe. You know, it's not like that. That's why I love this podcast. You know, we're just doing a podcast is that it gives us an opportunity just to share.
Right.
And we've started getting some feedback, which is kind of fun. You know, we've returned a few emails and some messages and I really like that. I like connecting, you know, it makes me feel really, really good.
I love that girl the other day that reached out to us, she was like, I really liked how you touched on botanicals. I would love for you to do a whole episode on botanicals. Yes. Thank you. We will.
Yeah. We should totally,
you know,
do that.
And anything else that people want to hear, because at the end of the day, like we're all going to learn from each other. That's what's so important about always having a mentor.
Uh huh.
Like you, mentors aren't like a step above you. Mentors are just somebody that's sharing something that you haven't experienced yet. You can be their mentor at the same time.
Well, yeah. And one of the things I've learned like in my practices is that anytime I'm engaged in a conversation with someone and I find myself kind of quote unquote giving them advice,
mm-hmm.
I pay really close attention to what I'm saying, because sometimes I'm not, you know, sometimes spirit sort of works through you and you say things and you're not really, it's not of the mind, it's of the heart.
Yeah.
And I've trained myself to really pay attention and then to reflect on that later, because I know that advice is actually for me.
Dude, I've had an hour conversation with my buddy Matt before, where halfway through the conversation, I've noticed everything I say is for me and everything you say is for you. And we're not really talking. We're just talking to ourselves.
Yeah, no,
we're looking at each other so that we can pretend like we're having a conversation, but we're really just giving ourselves the advice that we need. Like, and we both walked away from the conversation thinking it was awesome.
Yeah. I think it's called Ani or Aini. Yeah. And it's basically reciprocity.
Oh.
See, that's why I like that idea of a mentor,
yeah.
You know, mentorship, you know, and I think this is how we evolve quicker.
Yeah.
The minute you think you know something where you're going to then sell it, you know, especially when it comes to spiritual goods, that's where you're caught in your spiritual ego.
Yeah.
That's my two cents. You know, and I feel like I've been at this a while, and I had a point where I was seeing how other people were trying to, you know, make money off of their spiritual gifts. And I know a lot of people will disagree with me. That's fine. I don't really care. But make money off their spiritual gifts. And at one point I'm like, well, is that what I need to do? I need to adopt a spiritual identity. And then I need to do, you know, this, you know, sound bowls or
sound baths,
crystal healing, or, you know, like, is that what I need to be doing? You know? And then I had one of those moments where it's like, so I've worked through my ego identity. Now I'm just going to pick up a spiritual identity. Like, it just didn't make any sense to me. It felt like attachment again. And like, it felt like, yeah, you can do that. You know, but is that your highest and best? Like, no, because the minute I say that I know something enough to then, you know, preach about it, then I'm not learning anymore. At least I don't feel like then I'm learning anymore.
Yeah.
You know, I have an analogy, like there's, you know, I like being the one that's, you know, if you go to a seminar, right? You know, you've got the dude that everybody's congregating to watch. So the guy that's going to get up on stage, or the woman that's going to get up on stage and tell everybody, you know, what they know. Right. And then you have the audience. Well, I'd much rather be in the audience, because there's like 400 teachers in the audience.
Yeah.
You know, and you get that chance to talk to other people and kind of express ideas. You have that mentorship, you know, relationship, versus the guy at the podium. He's not learning anything. He's just telling you what he thinks he knows for now.
Yeah.
So that's my two cents. I think we've all been given spiritual talents, and then a physical talent to make money off of.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I see things kind of shifting where people are going to be making money off of the talents that they have that contribute to the greater good of humanity.
Yeah.
And spiritual talents are not going to be, bartered. Spiritual talents aren't going to be monetized.
Problem I have with spiritual talents is essentially everybody can do everything that every spiritual person is already doing.
Yeah, but some people have a focus through a specific spiritual, and you're right, like everybody is clairvoyant. Everybody is.
Instead of you telling me how things are,
right?
You could just teach me how to tap into it.
Well, that's the thing too, is that nobody can actually teach you to tap into it either. Or
share how you tapped into it. Maybe I can find something there that works for me.
Yeah. And if you think about like our journey,
mm-hmm.
we've taken a bunch of modalities. Like, we've looked at all of the modalities,
mm-hmm.
and we pick and choose. There's not really one modality that we do how it was taught to us to do. We've kind of rigged it.
Made it work for us.
Yeah. We've rigged it. Like, for instance, I did Bikram yoga for a long time. I'm not really a fan, but I love hot yoga and I love regular yoga. And so I put together my own kind of, it's a combination of Bikram, hot flow yoga. And I love it. Is it anything anybody's doing? I don't know. I don't really care. It feels good to me.
Yeah.
You know? So
that's how I prefer it.
Or the Wim Hof, you know, I bounce back and forth between doing Wim Hof or holotropic. You know, sometimes I take a cold shower. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I don't do the breathing before I take a cold shower.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes I don't do the breathing at all and just do the cold shower.
Yeah.
It really just depends on kind of what I do. And I think being flexible, sometimes when you have those rigid practices, it becomes monotonous, mundane.
Boring.
Yeah. You have to be able to shake it up and do what works for you. There was a time where I thought if I wasn't doing my Kijang, if I wasn't doing my hour of meditation, if I wasn't doing my cold showers, if I wasn't doing my yoga, it was like 2.5 hours of things that I thought I had to do to be considered a good spiritual person and a good spiritual practice.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
No, it's just more like you need to do the things that you just need to do something that makes yourself feel good.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I try to mix it up. I'm not doing the same thing every day, you know.
Sometimes my practice and all that, my best that day is just to breathe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes for me, like, you know, what's the difference between a walk and being on the elliptical? The amount of breathing you do. And I can tell which days I need the breathing or which days I just need the walk and the silence, mm-hmm. you know.
It's having this gentleness with ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, and practicing this gentleness, not laziness,
mm-hmm.
but gentleness with ourselves. We're so accustomed to practicing that with other people. And then we have this, rigid, regimented thing that we think we need to do. So, I'm happy I've gone through all of that. I'm happy I looked at all the crazy woo-woo.
Well,
you know, all the new age stuff, because I did.
There were times that it fit, and there were times that you liked it, and then there were times that you dropped things, and there were times that you changed things and you moved things. Again, that's like taking a look at everything and being mentored by everything and then picking and choosing what works for you and tweaking it and changing it. And
well, it was like my whole life I was looking through just a keyhole size opening. Yeah. And then it's like it was like two double doors just got blasted open in my head. And I was like, whoa, there's all this other stuff. And I started just, you know, putting things in my basket. Oh, I believe this. I believe this. I believe this. I believe this. And next thing you know, you're judging everybody for not believing those things. And then you're right back to where you were before.
Yeah.
But in a different, you know, frequency. It's the same. The matrix, the 3D matrix and the new age matrix, it's cut from the same cloth.
Yeah.
So you have to, at some point, I think I said this before, I came up with a litmus test, which I ask myself two questions before I believe anything. Is it for the greater good of humanity, whatever it is I'm looking into?
Mm-hmm.
And does it set out to divide us or, you know, bring us together?
Yeah. Great litmus test, I think.
And like 99% of shit gets kicked out because I'm like, nope, you're trying to separate us or whatever this is trying to separate us. You know, like when people talk about ascension.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, not ascension.
You know, it drives me nuts.
The big flash where we all spontaneously jump into the 5D.
But the thing that bothers me about that, so who knows, right? Maybe there is some flash or whatever. I don't know. I really have no idea.
What was the other thing? Don't some people just burn up?
Well, that's the thing is that there's a lot of people that say they're spiritual, they're like, you better do your work. You know, you're going to miss the boat. You know, you're going to be burned. Like, you know, you're going to go back to the central sun. I mean, I'm just like, who are you to say that? Who are you to say that?
You're not
going
to make the harvest.
Well, and keep in mind that to have a balance, everybody think of an old school scale. You have to have both parts of the dichotomy, you know, you have to have that dichotomy the balance.
I mean, at the end of the day, be a good human.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's like back in the day where everyone was like trying to pick a religion, right? Well, you gotta pick your religion because only one religion is going to get saved. No.
Yep.
Be a good human. And, you know, as far as doing your work, I mean, yeah, there's some work to do as far as like, you know, plowing through your obstacles, but
yeah.
You know, they're your
follow your curiosities, whatever those are for you.
We're all fucking human and we're all linked, and there's not some of us that are going to make it and some of us that aren't. The evil little pieces of shit that are on this planet still going to make it. They just got a lot of work to do.
The truth is they are serving a purpose as well. And I
giving you the balance.
I understand this a lot more now, finding out that my stepdad is a pedophile. You know, he awakened me to some things I never would have seen before.
Yeah.
Does that make what he does right? No, absolutely not.
No. Nope.
You know, but would I have known what I know right now about the human condition? Had I not had that experience? Absolutely not.
Right.
You know, so, You know, that's the thing, is that the perceivably dark individuals are helping, you know, humans with good hearts wake up.
Yeah.
And achieve sovereignty. And, you know, that's really how we're going to save the world. There's no program or government that's going to put the world back in order and make us connect to the earth better. You know, it's going to be what we do. Our own personal work is what's going to,
yeah,
to change and shift the world. And
it's that advice that, you know, I give people quite a bit, and it's advice that I've taken. It's something you've shouted a lot, and that's really just focus on being your very best self, and everything else around you kind of takes care of itself.
Yeah, I know, it really does.
When you become your best self, everybody wants to be around you. Your relationships become happier. Your work becomes happier. You're able to kind of attract what you want to attract. I mean, it's just...
Yeah.
And so if the whole planet starts trying to be their very best self, I'm like, get out of here.
Yeah.
We're not going to have to, you know, govern ourselves to the extent that we do right now, you know?
But. Yeah. I mean, what we need really, opinion, direct democracy. But you can't have a direct democracy until you have people that are really on this journey of sovereignty.
Yeah.
And equanimity. And I don't even think people even understand what equanimity is.
No, I mean, it always baffles me. Like a perfect example is our HOA, right? You have the majority of the HOA that they're like, let's strip the bylaws down and let's stop being so restrictive because we're adults and we live in a good neighborhood and we all want to maintain the values of our homes. And then you have that little select few that's like, no, we have to have rules. We have to babysit ourselves. We have to, right. You know, those are the people that, come on, man.
Yeah, well, and they live in a lot of fear too. I just feel bad for them.
Yeah.
I'm like, you're afraid of a fraction of the 1%. No, but none of those people live in our neighborhood.
I know.
Like, we're not going to have somebody, you know, erecting, I don't know, tombstones or something in their front yards with pink fences. I mean, like, I don't even know anybody like that. I don't know of any houses like that.
That was my point. I'm like, so we're going to keep all these bylaws in motion because we're afraid that somebody's going to paint their house pink.
Yeah, well,
and put a junkyard in their front yard
out of spite. That's what she basically said.
That's what she said. Out of spite. Yeah, like, she gave an example of somebody that did it out of spite, and I was like, wow.
Okay.
All right then. Anyway, not to go off on an HOA tangent, but I'm gonna.
But you did.
Yeah, I did, because I was dealing with that this morning. I'm gonna put us back on track. So, going back to your Peru preparation. Tell people what it's like to get from where we live to Peru.
Yeah, so I take...
It's like a movie of Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Yep. Go. So we'll first take a plane to, I think this time it's Atlanta.
Okay.
And we connect to an international flight to Lima.
Okay.
We'll get into Lima sometime around midnight. So we'll stay the night in Lima. We get up the next morning and we take a plane from Lima to Iquitos.
Mm-hmm.
Then we take a bus. It may be a bus. It might be a taxi from there to a hotel. This particular retreat center wanted us to spend a day in Iquitos. They felt like it was really important to kind of immerse ourselves in the energy of Iquitos.
Okay.
So we do. So we'll be there at sometime 3 or 4 in the afternoon. And then the next morning, then we get picked up from the Temple of the Way of Light.
Mm-hmm.
Take a bus to the Amazon River, where then we get into a boat and we travel down one of the tributaries of the Amazon till we get to the dock for the Temple of the Way of Light. And then we're going to hike for a mile into the jungle.
Now, for anybody wondering, how scary is it trying to coordinate this trip? So Lima is not, Lima is a pretty sophisticated city.
There's a lot of people that live in Lima.
A shit ton of people.
What is that? Like 5 million people, right?
It was a lot.
Whatever. I think it was like 5 million.
I remember
million
I was
people.
Thinking, I was like, well, it's more than where we live. Crazy. But once you get into Lima, like, I was nervous, like, wait, we have a 12-hour layover? What are we going to do?
Right.
Right? There's like this, I don't know if it's a Marriott. There's something that's literally.
It is I think it's a Ramada now.
So you walk across the street and they have two options for you. You know, if you can either rent a room.
Right.
For just, you know, 24 hours. So you can sleep for 6 hours, take a shower, then get up and go back, walk across the street to the airport. Or you can go into their,
Health spa.
Health spa. And I think you pay like $10 to basically sleep on a health bed, and then, you know, you can swim or do whatever you want. So it's easy. It's easy. You don't have to worry about taxis and cabs and things like that. You can just walk across the street, walk back.
Yeah. The only difficult part is the food part just during travel. So here's my hacks, because I will take, well, first of all, you have to, you know, buy your fruit. I buy the fruit. I bring nuts with me, and then I buy fruit in the airport. They're usually fruit friendly now. So oranges or apples or bananas. And then I bring a bunch of herbal tea packs because the flight attendants are always so confused, especially on the flight from, this time will be Atlanta to Lima.
Yeah.
They're always confused because you're on this flight for almost 7 hours.
Yeah.
And you're refusing their food. You're refusing the snacks. You know, you're asking for water, or you're asking for boiled, you know, hot water for your tea. And they always come, "Are you sure? Like, are you?" And no, it's, I'm like, I'm okay. And then they find out that you're eating fruit. And every single time they've stopped me to let me know. Now, you know, you have to get rid of that, right? Before we land, that has to go in the trash, because it's a $250 fine per piece of fruit.
So is that it? You just got to have it done before you get off the plane.
Yeah, yeah. So
whatever, like, you're flying out of right before you land in Lima.
Right.
Everything's got to be gone.
Well, yeah. So you basically can't get off the plane in Lima with fruit in your backpack. If you're caught, you're busted.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's probably, and then, you know, you're basically just drinking a lot of bottled water, and we find fruit when we can. And then we just don't plan on really eating until we get to the, I mean, like, once we're in Iquitos, Temple of the Way of Light recommended a couple places that have some approved ayahuasca diet restaurants.
Oh, nice.
So we plan on going to that one.
Good.
If I can find it, which I don't know how I'm going to do that, but we'll figure it out.
Or just eat fruit.
Yeah, or we'll just eat fruit until we get to the sanctuary. Yeah,
I mean, you're going to be eating so much friggin' fruit.
Yeah.
It's
fruta.
Well, the thing about it is, you know, I don't know what the menu's like at the Temple of the Way of Light, but, you know, at Spirit Quest, like, as bland as that food is on a day-to-day thing here, for some reason, when you're in the jungle and you're taking ayahuasca, food's amazing.
Yeah, I don't think many people's minds are on food when you're working with ayahuasca. It just seems to take a back seat to everything else that's going on.
My mind was on breakfast every morning because the energy that I would put out the night before. And I'd look forward to that bowl of fruit every morning.
Yeah, I think I just was in a different headspace. But the food that they give you is usually like a fruit salad. This place will give you fruit smoothies and fruit juices. They have oatmeal, which I thought was great because I can always take my oatmeal, chop up a banana, an apple. Like, that's basically what I'm doing at home. They have like beans, legumes, rice. So they also do, I think it's eggs. And I want to say there was something else that they, for people that are non-vegan or vegetarian. I can't remember. I can't find it either. Give me a second. Maybe I can find it. I think it will say.
So.
Oh, one of the other things too, in their preparation guide, they talk about vaccinations and malaria medications. I've never done that.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, I've come home with hundreds of mosquito bites, like specifically not from ayahuasca, but after Wachuma, because we're out in the jungle a lot. Yeah. So just FYI, I mean, you got to do what's best for you, but that's not something that's not something that I've ever even kind of worried about.
I think they do that just because that's the standard precaution. But I mean, I don't know too many people that actually do it, and everybody's okay. So in my opinion, but again, do what's, you know, best for you. But
yeah, I think so. You know, let's see, other things. I'm just trying to find this part where they talk about what we eat, but.
Does this place do mapacho?
They say to bring a lighter, so I'm assuming they do, but they just haven't made a mention of it.
Mapacho now, I haven't had a ceremonial tobacco that you puff like a cigar. It's, I feel like it works really well with ayahuasca. I'm not a smoker, but I liked it, so.
Yeah, I haven't worked with Mapacho in a long time, so.
So I'm assuming the schedule is you're going to stay a night in Iquitos, then you're going to get there. You're going to take your boat ride the next day.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get there. You're going to walk your mile, and then they're going to probably settle you in.
Yeah.
Probably go over some how certain things are going to work. And
right.
And then it's the following day you take your first cup, right?
Right. So it'll be actually on Kylie's birthday.
Yeah. And do they do that when the sun goes down?
Yeah. So it sounds
like 9 o'clock thing.
Sounds like it starts about the same time and it's throughout the night.
And then, so since there's five, is it like 2 days on, 1 day off, 2 days on?
I'm not sure. There's 9 days, five cups. So yeah. There's several, looks like there'll be several back to backs. And if we're not doing it on the 18th, then I'm not necessarily certain. They didn't get specific with their manuals about what days.
Yeah.
I did find that part. So they provide a simple diet of chicken, fish, rice, fresh vegetables, legumes, fruit salads, eggs, oats, herbal teas, and fresh smoothies and juices. It's quite a variety of food that they offer, which is great.
Yeah.
Which is, and they do things, so they kind of make it like the soupy legumes, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
You know, so you can, you know, dress it over the rice and.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, I'm super excited for you. So so that's your technical preparation.
Yeah, my tech.
Yeah. You know, so what's your emotional preparation? Yeah. What is.
So I've been trying to do a lot more walks in nature.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes living in the suburbs and.
You should totally do one today.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to do more walks in nature. We've had a lot of snow.
Yeah.
So there's not been a lot of like stargazing, that type of thing, which I really love to do.
Yeah.
I've been doing just kind of entries in my journal. Like journaling for me has always been a horrible task.
Yeah.
Because it's like, dear diary, today, you know. And instead, you're the one that made a great comment, which was, you know, someone had just talked to you about just writing down random thoughts.
Just jot it down, yeah.
And I love that idea. And so I've just been jotting down.
Yeah, they were like, no one's going to read it. The only person who needs to understand what's going on is you. So you don't have to put it in a storybook format. And I was like, oh my God, duh. Because that's what I hate about it too. Yeah, write down random thoughts. Because when you write it down, sometimes you're writing it down and it's going to help it come to fruition. You know?
Right. So I've been doing that and I've been hyper aware of my emotions. I can tell you that 2020 is all about my emotions.
Yeah.
Had massive downloads at the end of the year in 2019 and like big ahas 2020.
Yeah.
And that has been really, so I've been really hyper aware of how I'm feeling, why I'm feeling, what's making... What's making me feel this way? That's such a victim statement. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to get away from that and saying, why am I choosing to feel this way?
Yeah.
You know, did I eat something that is now, you know, where it's difficult for me to choose, you know, feeling this other way, you know? So I've been thinking a lot about that. I think I've been really kind. I've been really trying to address any of my shadow parts, you know, like, is there, you know, like for instance, the mom and Terry stuff, the stepdad stuff.
Yeah.
You know, have I really, you know, forgiven? Did I really gain some resolution? Do I have any like pieces left over that I need to look at? You know?
Yeah.
I really think that our realities are a reflection of what's happening within ourselves. And I've used that for me, it's a very deep spiritual practice to use that and to take accountability and responsibility for whatever is reflecting into my reality.
Yeah.
So we've had a few things kind of pop up in the last couple of weeks and I've wondered, okay, what am I supposed to see here? Like what's going on within myself? What is my reality trying to show me about what's happening within?
See, I think that is amazing advice and I wish I would take it more. No, I do because I think other people can relate to this, right? You're looking around and you're like, geez, life fucking is like a shit sandwich right now. I just can't get away from this. And you just keep looking outside yourself like, why is all this happening to me?
Yeah. And so how I figure that out is then I'm very aware of my judgments of other people, particularly the judgments that I don't verbalize.
Yeah.
Because that will give me, that will kind of shine a light in a direction. You know, so depending on what my whatever those judgments are of,
shows you what you're supposed to look
at. Other people, it shows me maybe something that I'm internally struggling with.
Yeah.
You know, so that's another deep, deep spiritual practice that I do daily. Mm-hmm. And I'm very good at it. The problem is sometimes I'm really good at listening to other people's judgments of other people. And then I'll sit there, I'll get really quiet. And I'm thinking about, well, why is that person, you know, whoever's making the judgment, why is that person struggling with that? You know, but I've been trying lately not to do that because that's another judgment of, it's like a judgment of a judgment. And that says really more about me, but.
Very detailed.
So I mean, like I've been really kind of feeling those things out. I've been really trying to connect to my heart more, express a lot of gratitude.
Yeah.
Man, I tell you what, there's not a day that has gone by since I started doing the detoxes and just cleaning up my diet in general, where I just haven't felt so grateful for my life, for my path, for what I've been through.
Yeah.
You know, I really do sincerely feel like I'm one of the lucky ones. And I think somebody that is, somebody that knows my story is probably confused by that. Because they're like, I don't understand how you think you're one of the lucky ones. But I was thinking last night about it. I'm just going to read something I feel like I'm one of the lucky ones. But I was thinking last night, and I was jotting something down in my journal, and I realized last night something pretty important, at least for me, this is what I wrote was, some of us didn't spend years training through meditating or 30 days in a cave in darkness. Some of us got our training in darkness when we were children, studying from an abusive adult.
Yeah.
And, I realized there's several ways to gain that initiation.
Yeah.
And to get that training.
It's a good one.
And I wouldn't change anything. You know, I have complete and utter acceptance for my life, for all of the teachings.
Not a lot of people can say that.
Well, it's taken me a long time.
Yeah.
I'm 6 years in. So, you know, and that's really not a lot of time. You know,
to be abused in various different ways your entire childhood and go, you know what? I appreciate that because it's helped me see things and who I am. And
I see things about the human condition you just can't read in a book.
Yeah.
And I am so appreciative of that because there are times where I come face to face with a human like we did earlier this week.
Yeah.
That is in real pain.
Yep.
And I know based on my own experiences what to say to help soothe a bit.
Yeah.
That's it. And I'm happy to do it. I want to do it.
Yeah. Well, and there's no better way to really, really understand how to help someone until you just helped yourself, you know? Like
you
healed yourself and like, so you know intimately.
The only way, really.
Yeah. You know, it's not something you can get trained at a school. You know intimately how it went and what you went through and the pluses and the minuses and the ups and downs and whatever.
Yeah. There's I've noticed in our community, there's like those that will read a lot. They collect big words
and quotes
and then they recite quotes.
Mm-hmm.
And although that might be some powerful perspective, sometimes it's just not helpful.
Yeah.
And what I learned through finding out stepdad's a pedophile this last year is that that's really not helpful. Those spiritual memes, you know, I mean, like even the, you know, my meme, you know, that my reality is a reflection of what's happening within myself. Whew. Like I just did not want to take responsibility or accountability for that at all. And that didn't feel good. That's where I said yesterday, like I knew I had to grieve first. There was no sorting anything out until I had to grieve. And so that was powerful because if I ever come across another human that's hurting, or let's say there's someone right now that's listening to us and that's hurting deeply, who's had an equally terrifying or horrible experience like what we have. You know, my advice to that person is put down the books, you know, stop listening to all the spiritual guru crap, grieve.
Yeah.
You got to be a human for a minute. You got to
feel it.
You got to feel.
You and if that let means yourself feel it.
There was a moment where I was crying every day and not like a little cry.
There was a moment we pulled over on the side of the freeway and you yelled at the cactus.
Oh, no, no. I screamed. I did a screen purge. I'd never done that before. It was really great. Yeah. It was cathartic.
Hit one of those giant ass Wile E. Coyote cactuses in Arizona.
But I mean, I guess that's my point and my perspective is that like the training that I've received is not really something that you could ever receive in a school.
No, it's firsthand.
I wouldn't have ever learned this meditating for 3 years or spending 30 days in a dark cave, you know, but those are like real, you know, spiritual practices that a lot of people do. And a lot of the times in our community, that's how we give people cred. Well, that person spent this amount of time in an Indian working in India doing this or in a Buddhic this, or, you know, they were oming for 8 years, you know?
Yeah, but that shit's not relatable. What's relatable to me is, well, that person got tortured. That person was neglected. That person was abandoned, physically abused, mentally abused, and they were able to unwind it and heal themselves because there's some pieces of that person's story that I can relate to and some pieces of that I can learn from, take from, you know, and apply it to my own self. When the fuck am I going to have 3 years to go spend in a dark cave?
Well, we're not. We're not. You know? We're trying to find
16 days to go, you know, to the Amazon is hard enough.
What I realize is that I don't have to do those things because I challenged myself as an infant and a child with the darkness.
Yeah.
I faced death every day of my life because when you're a child and you're being beaten and abused, you don't know you're not going to die.
You don't have a protector when it's your protector.
No, at some point, you know, from the stories that I've heard when I was about three, that's when I really started to protect my brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
And I would take the beatings for them because I always knew I could handle it.
Yeah. Fucking warrior.
No, she was a warrior.
Who? Little you?
Little me.
Yeah.
She was a warrior.
Yeah, she was better. Oh.
Anyways, I'm grateful for the podcast because it's nice to sit here and just blah, you know, and we've had some really nice feedback and I really appreciate the feedback to the handful of you that have, you know, reached out. I really appreciate it. It has made me feel like that it's good that I'm sharing, you know.
Yeah.
As a collective, we can either continue to tippy toe around things and not really talk directly but indirectly about issues that we're all facing and attempt to, you know, flex our spiritual memes or our spiritual downloads, you know. But what I've found so satiating lately has been really getting vulnerable with the people that I interact with because we can't heal something that we're not aware of.
Yeah.
And we have a collective disease of shame and hiding our pain.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's really powerful that the more of us that can share, you know, the more of us that, you know, that are open and vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know, I think that more people are willing to be open and vulnerable. And the more people that do that, I think we're really going to get, you know, real healing. And this is by everybody doing it, and everybody has to do it. Everybody has to heal in their own way, right?
Right.
By doing that, that's how the world will, that's how we'll save our species.
That's how we shift.
Right.
Yeah, well, yeah. I appreciate you sharing your stories.
Sure you do.
I do.
I'm just kidding.
I do. I'm you're recognizing you for a minute. You're a badass. You're strong and you've attacked everything with 100% effort and focus, you know, and that's not how I approach things. And so I think my timeline is a little different, but I try to, you know, I try to take what I see, you know, I live with you. So I try to take what you do and whatever works for me, I try to apply it because it works, you know?
Right. Well, I just appreciate where you're at because, you know, there have been times where I thought, well, why isn't he doing what I'm doing? Or, you know, why isn't your practice like my practice? You know, that's a very egoic thing for me to think anyways. But what I realized was that, you know, if I'm doing it perfectly, and I really do believe that you're doing it perfectly, and I really do believe that, but you've given me an opportunity to see things, you know, because you've been, again, the relationship that we have, we know we're mirrors for each other. We know we reflect back at each other and we also project onto each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I would have been able to do the work that I've needed to do, you know, intrinsically, had you not been so powerful in how you've mirrored, reflected, and projected.
Yeah.
You know, I've learned so much, you know. I've also never, ever had anyone love me so unconditionally as you have. And because there are days where I'm just like, he's like Superman. Like, how does he even put up with me?
Just love the shit out of you.
Well, I feel it. And I love it. And, you know, every year that we're together, you know, it's every year we're together. I feel like that the love, and we've been together now
16 years.
Wow. I mean, 16 years. And I just feel like every year we get closer and closer, you know. And I also, I feel like that as we get closer to ourselves, we're able to get closer to each other.
For sure. Yeah.
You know. Yeah. Well, and I'm happy about
it. I couldn't have done this without you. So
you could have done it without me.
I couldn't have. And that's what I said. You can hear it.
Oh, I didn't hear the N apostrophe T part.
I could. Well, it's probably my slang, you know, like.
Oh, you could not. Just kidding.
I could not have done this without you. And it's, you know, first of all, you went first. You go first on everything. You know, you're the one that wanted to heal the very, very first. And I listened. So I was just trying to help.
Really? I wanted to die. And yeah. I think that
I wanted you to stay. I wanted you to stick around. And
no, but I mean, like, even past the physical part, like, really, I wanted, you know, really my main focus about ayahuasca that first time, yes, it was healing, but this idea that you could die and be reborn.
Yeah.
I can't explain it. It was an urge. Like, I had to die. It was something I'd been thinking about since I was like 3.
Well, you did.
Yeah, I did. And it was good. It's really good.
I like the look on your face. And it was good. Yeah.
Well, right. It was. I mean, what are we without connection, right? And and it really has given me an opportunity to connect in ways that I just never even thought. I remember thinking way back when, if I could just have enough control not to drink.
Yeah.
You know, that would make my life so much happier. And now look where we're at. It's just remarkable.
I remember thinking back then, like, you know, and you've said the same thing. So I know you've had the same comment where you look in the mirror and you're like, so this is it.
Yeah.
So this is it.
It's Groundhog's Day now.
I don't know how to, you know, cause there was a moment where it's like, I don't know how the food's not making me feel good.
Right.
The job's not making me feel good. The repetitive routines every day are not making me feel good. But this is it.
This is life. This is living, huh?
And who knew? I mean, I think we probably had an inkling, but, like, you know, at the end of the day, it was like, you know, it's time to heal and address your pains. And as you do that, it's time to find self-love, right? And it kind of comes back down to that. And once you find the self-love and you can love yourself, then it helps, you know, you can love other people better. People love you better. Life just gets better.
Yeah, the quality of life, the quality of adventure that we have now.
Yeah.
The spontaneity that we have. And you know what really makes me excited is being such a great example for our kids.
Yeah.
And it does rub off. If you ever wanted to see how your choices influence your children change and watch it happen, it is remarkable to watch your kids literally just, I mean, you don't think your kids care that much about what it is that you're doing, even on a day-to-day basis in your habit.
So much.
Yeah. It's remarkable what they do.
We have a gap in our kids because you had 2 kids from a previous marriage.
Right.
You know, I feel like they're my kids, but
right.
We have 4 kids with a big gap. And one of the most things I'm proud of is the work that I've done and the work that you've done has both the older 2 kids were kind of on a weird trajectory themselves.
Well, they were on the same trajectory that we were, you know, basically an epigenetic trajectory. Yeah.
Your kids are a product of you. And so if your kids are, lack of better term, if your kids are fucked up, they're on a bad street, they're on a bad road, they're going down that and you're just like, they're hopeless, this and that. It's you. Fix you. They'll notice. And they'll fix themselves.
Yeah, parents do not like to hear that.
I know they don't like to hear that.
We didn't like to hear it either.
No, but I see it. I see it. Yeah. I couldn't be more proud of the older two because, you know, some of the stuff that happened was completely out of our control.
Right.
Right. The, some of the sexual abuse, we tried to protect them the very best we could. And it was when they were not in our care, but that's their life. That's
their story.
That's their story.
Unfortunately.
And all we did is started working on ourselves, and they spontaneously started, specifically the older one, Taylor. I mean, specifically, he started working on himself.
Yeah.
Kylie's a little more stubborn.
Well, here's,
but we didn't know her whole story.
You know, that's something too, is that like, our 16-year-old, he was 16 at the time.
Yeah.
So six years ago. And, he had a spontaneous awakening is what I would call it. It was like, we went and worked with ayahuasca and came back and we were making changes and he had a spontaneous awakening. He started to meditate, you know what? And it's just remarkable. He's 16 years old and he's like, you know what? I'm going to meditate.
Yep.
You know, he started to learn how to astrally project. He still does it. I mean, I can't even do
started
that.
Started getting interested in Qigong and, you know, just kind of the, those types of
Tai Chi for and, a little bit, some martial arts things and, you know.
And but, then just started pontificating.
I know. He's so brilliant. Every time he doesn't live at our house. He has his own house now, but every time he comes over, he's just so wise.
Yeah.
I'm just in awe of him. I'm like, you're 22. What are you going to be when you're like 50?
Just when you think back 7 years ago, so a year before, when life was at its worst in our house, and you see where the kids were at, and then you see where they're at now, it's proof that your kids are a product of you. And if you don't like where your kids are at, you need to make your own changes, because you're not going to help anybody until you help yourself. So,
yep, this is very true.
Dude, should we stop on that wisdom?
Yeah, we should.
Should I drop the mic?
Yeah. Well done. Well done, Mr. Joel.
Like we do a, well we done. Do an hour and a half or well 2 hour podcast, whatever this is. I give two bits of wisdom. You give 10,000 and, but we're going to stop.
It's just because I'm the talker. We all know this. And you told me last night that's what you wanted anyways.
I did. Well, I like you're very articulate and I love hearing you. You know, I love hearing you retell the story. I really do. So,
all right.
Anyway, well, we have a frigging kid we have to go pick up because he decided to play frisbee in the mud, and apparently that's our problem. So
now his pants are unwearable.
Yeah. Anyway,
we appreciate you guys all listening, and from all the corners of the world, like that's been really fun to
it's
see.
It's been amazing. Yeah. Like, with 40 countries now.
Yeah.
Like what?
Yeah, I just think it's fun, and I think it's fun that we're saying something that's at least a little bit interesting.
Totally. Anyway.
But anyways, we wish you all a wonderful day.
Yes, day, week, and we'll post another one, you know, real soon. So.
Right.
Like, subscribe, share. I don't even. See, I can't sell.
This is where we need our little one to do that too. Yeah. And smash that like button, because she does that sometimes on her TikTok. She's like, subscribe, and share, and smash that button, or whatever she says. It's cute.
Anyway, thanks for listening.
Yep, thanks.
Bye.